Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Lord Onyx, and all the hosts 7 nights a week for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Sacred Divergence Radio, with your hostess, Reverend Elizabeth, on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Listen in every Sunday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, and join us in the chat room as we discuss music, magic, spirituality, and more.
And welcome, one and all, to Sacred Divergence Radio's episode. I am so happy you are with us tonight. And tonight, well, first of all, I am Reverend Elizabeth Hamilton, and I'm coming to you from the lovely state of North Carolina. And tonight we will be discussing the winter solstice, myths and imagery. And first, as I've been on a Isis, Osiris, Horus kick lately, I would like to share with you the story of Isis, Osiris, and Horus. According to the Heliopolitan tradition, Osiris was granted the throne of Egypt rather than his elder brother Set. Set was none too pleased about this, but became enraged when Osiris left Egypt to travel the world and left Isis in charge of the kingdom instead of him. Set decided to get rid of his brother and take the throne for himself. Although the myth of the origins of Anubis is later development, it was also cited as one of the reasons why Set was jealous of his brother Osiris and conspired to kill him. Set tricked Osiris into climbing into a wooden chest cut to fit him, and then sealed the box and threw it into the Nile. Isis searched everywhere for her husband's body, and found it lodged in a tamarisk bush, which had grown into a huge tree on contact with the body of the god. She broke open the chest and carried his body back to Egypt. She placed the body in the temple, and transformed herself into a kite, which is a small bird, and flew over the body, singing a song of mourning. She then used her prodigious magical talent to conceive Heru Sa Aset, Horus, son of Isis, whose destiny was to avenge his father and defeat Set. Isis then implored Thoth for his help in resurrecting Osiris. The two deities composed the ritual of life, the spell which granted eternal life after death. However, Set discovered their plans and stole Osiris's body. He split it into 14 pieces and scattered them throughout the length and breadth of Egypt. Still, Isis refused to be beaten. She enlisted the support of her sister Nephthys to find the pieces and help of Anubis to prepare the body in the first mummification. When the opening of the mouth ceremony was performed, Osiris's spirit returned to his body. However, no spirit which has passed through the land of the dead may live in the land of the living, and so Ra decreed Osiris should become king of the underworld, and Anubis agreed to give up his position as lord of the netherworld out of respect for Osiris. Meanwhile, Isis hid with her infant son in the marshes of the Delta, protecting him until the day when he could face Set and recover his father's kingdom. When Horus came of age, he battled with his uncle. Isis used her magic to assist Horus in battle, but when the opportunity presented itself, she could not kill Set, who was after all her elder brother. This enraged Horus, who promptly lopped off her head. Isis was apparently unperturbed by this turn of events, and caused a cow's head to grow on her shoulders. Fortunately for Horus, Isis forgave his unreasonably aggressive action and continued to support him. And so there we have it. And some people say that Horus was born on the winter solstice of Isis, who may or may not have been a virgin. And this is supported by author and priest Joseph McCabe, who says, Whatever we make of the original myth, Isis seems to have been originally a virgin, or perhaps sexless goddess. And in the later period of Egyptian religion, she was again considered a virgin goddess, demanding very strict abstinence from her devotees. It is at this period, apparently, that the birthday of Horus was annually celebrated, about December 25th, in the temples. And, let me see, what else do I have? I have... more on, let's see, the myths surrounding Yule. Yule was originally Jol, which was the Old Norse term for it. And we don't know exactly what the heathen rituals were concerned with, the heathen Yule was concerned with, but there's an article that I'm reading here that includes many mythological features that may throw some light on what our ancestors were up to during Yule, and what they may have actually celebrated. The rebirth of the sun goddess, the liberation from the rule of death and the powers of the underworld, the celebration of Thor, who is to protect us from these powers, and the celebration of the ancestral mothers, who will guide us through the time of darkness into the new sun cycle. And this article was written by a Norwegian, so it's coming from the Norwegian perspective. During the 10th century AD, King Hakon the Good, who was a Christian, demanded that the Jolablot, or Jolabloat, should be held on the 25th of December in accordance with the continental Christmas celebrations, a decision which was part of the political process of trying to christen Norway. Yet this was not the original heathen date for Yule. Yule, or Yol, was the name of the time between the winter solstice and the Yolablot, Yule sacrifice, which originally may have happened on the 12th of January. It means that Yule begins with the winter solstice and lasts until the 12th of the next year, if you are a heathen. The Yule celebration as a whole was often referred to as drinking Yule, as in to drink Yule. This descriptive term strongly suggests that drink was an important part of the celebration. We also know that apart from drinking a lot, there would also be feasting, banquets, games, and song, and sacrifice to the gods and other powers of winter. But it is uncertain what exactly was celebrated during Yule drinking. It has been suggested that they sacrificed for the new year, for the dead, or that it was a sun or light celebration to counter the darkness of winter. We can but speculate, and speculate I will, taking a mythological approach. We have, a poem here. A daughter is birthed by Elf Splendor, the sun goddess. After she is swallowed by the wolf, she, the new sun, shall ride, as the other gods are dying, the old paths of her mother. Since Yule begins with solstice, it is natural to assume that the sun was an important feature of this ancient celebration. But how? Popular modern notions aside, it is a fact that we actually know very little about Norse pagan religion. What we know is based on how we interpret the few pieces of the puzzle we actually have, mostly through old texts, folklore, and archaeological finds, and how well we can imagine what winter must have felt like to people who did not have any of the modern comforts of our day. The day of solstice is the shortest day of the year, and in Norway, as in other countries of the far north, it is particularly short, lasting a few hours at best. In the northern parts of Norway, the day of winter solstice is hardly a day at all, but rather a short moment of dark bluish light at midday, before night once more settles and the sun is not seen. To the ancients, it must have appeared as if a wolf of darkness was catching up on her, or that she had in fact succumbed, shining only a bleak light from the realm of hell, or from the wolf's belly. When the poem quoted above refers to how the new sun goddess will begin to ride the ancient paths of her mother when the gods are dying, it is not just a reference to Ragnarok. It is a reference to a time when the gods are weakened, dying, awaiting the gift of new life that is given by the resurrected maiden, as described in the Skaldic poem Hóslóng, where the gods begin to age and die while their shared singular lover, Asa Leika, the one lover of all the gods, or Asa Iika, I-E-I-K-A, the maiden goddess, resides in the underworld. It may have mean several things at once, but on one level this is the reference to winter, and to the fact that the gods depend on the fruit of their lover, the goddess of resurrections, in order to revive and retain their immortality, their youth, and their strength. The solstice may well have represented the return of the life-giving sun goddess, or even the rebirth of her new self, her daughter, so essential for the return of life, light, and nourishment. Yule began at solstice and was a time of darkness when, day by day, the days grew longer, showing that the sun was being reborn and victorious. Perhaps Yule was, originally, that time of year where time stood still and where the goddess of the new time cycle, the new year, was still in her infancy, a fragile time that had to be supported ritually by all those who were in dire need of her success. From the Viking Age, we know that the sun, known in the Old Norse as Sol, in Germanic as Sunna, hence sun, was considered a goddess who dwelled among the Aesir, and who rode or drove a chariot across the sky on an eternal flight from the devouring wolf of darkness. Eventually, she is doomed to be swallowed by the wolf. In the Völuspá, this would appear to be the time of the Ragnarok, but it is also an annual event, because every year the sun of the north is in fact swallowed by darkness. In Norse mythology, the wolf is a creature of hell and the underworld, representing death as well as related issues such as desire, life force, survival instincts, hunger, and greed. Not an evil creature, but a formidable one, and often an opponent, unless you learn to steer it like the giantess Hyrrokin, Fire Spinner, Hyndla, She-Wolf, and the god Odin, the spirit, appear to do. In the case of the sun, we may safely assume that the wolf who eats her represents death, and death is in the Norse myths not a fixed state, but a transition phase associated with darkness and coldness, and winter. There are a few fragmented myths and texts about her which show that she was essential to the order of cosmos, to time, and the creation of life on Earth. She came from the southern realms of heat, same as the Norns and the Valkyrie, threw her right hand around the steeds of heaven, the planets, claimed ownership to her halls, the planets, and shone her rays upon the rocks of the hall called Earth, which then began to sprout forth green growth. Whereas that myth is a cosmic creation story, a genesis, we may also imagine that it was used as the image of the way the rays of the great goddess of light brings forth new green growth on her hall, the earth goddess, after winter's darkness. The swallowing of the sun by a wolf may appear to be a reference to Ragnarok, but could also, or originally, been an image of how the sun is swallowed by darkness during winter. Since Christian Christmas is all about the birth of a divine sun, a theme known to have been practiced by many older religions and often having to do with the winter solstice, we may also recognize that the celebration of the birth of a daughter may have been an ancient theme in Scandinavia, where the sun is a birth-giving mother, birthing her own new self at the beginning of a new cycle. In fact, as I showed in the Edda stanza above, there is a reference in the Eddas as to how the sun goddess bears a daughter who will continue riding in the same paths as her mother after she has been swallowed by a wolf. It is the theme of cyclical time, how the end of a time cycle and thus the end of a sun gives way to the new cycle and a new sun. Thus the theme is not just about Ragnarok, but about how the sun rebirths herself when the next cycle starts. A cycle may just be a year. May the birth of a new sun goddess have been part of a solstice celebration? I think it certainly could have been, at least at some point in time. We know that the sun goddess was of central importance to Scandinavian religions during the Bronze Ages, and that a lot of sun goddesses' features and symbols survived into the late Norse mythology and religious symbolism. My goodness, this is a long, long, long article. And so let me try to get some myths here, some really cool myths. here is a Poetic Edda, a couple of stanzas from the Poetic Edda. Thor and the Yule Goat. Then all the rulers went to the high chairs of fate, the sacrosanct gods, and of this they spoke, who had the air all blended with evil, and who to the line of devourers given the poetry's maiden. Thor alone was then seized by his powerful anger. He seldom sits when he hears about such things. So, this is referencing that when faced with the unpredictable powers of darkness and the underworld, people in heathen times would need assistance. No matter how hard they tried to placate the kindred of night and death, they could only often hope for divine protection, and in that regard, the god Thor was the great protector, the one god whose main mission was to protect his mother Earth and the middle world from the powers of darkness and destruction, and the only one who had the strength and the courage to stand up to the wolf-riding lady of death. There is also the great protector. Thor is also the great protector of the maiden, that divine and life-providing damsel, annually in distress, whose light and love belongs to the gods, and to whom they looked for their annual rejuvenation. Perhaps it was to him that gods and people looked to for help and protection when the time of the great battle for her resurrection took place among the gods had arrived. We know that Thor was important during Yule celebration, and the reason may be the above, his role as protector against exactly the kinds of forces that roamed free on Earth during the fragile time between the rebirth of the sun and our actual resurrection to former glory at the 12th of January. He may have represented the hero of the day, the one whose protection and direct action not only protected the people against the onslaughts of the destructive powers, but who also saved the soul or damsel in distress in some way or another. It is at least very likely that Thor, as a god of Yule, ensured the safe growth, the protection of, and eventually the glorious return of the new sun. We do not know exactly how Thor was worshipped during the Yule in pagan times, but it is thought that some of these Thor rituals may have survived in Scandinavian tradition called Yulebuk, the Yule Goat. The goat, a symbol of Thor, was an established symbol of Yule, and the animal was slaughtered as a sacrifice during Yule, perhaps referring to the myth of how Thor could slaughter his precious goats and revive them the day after with a blow from his hammer, a symbol of resurrection, and particularly resurrection of that which gives nourishment. It is possible that myths like these were reenacted ritually by people who dressed with a goat's head wearing goat's fur. The later tradition of the Yule goat that survived in modern times involves people, today mostly children, wearing masks while visiting their neighbors, singing Christmas carols and receiving food, today mostly sweets. We may well imagine the heathen origins of this tradition, perhaps with goat-headed masked men roaming the neighborhood, singing and dancing, and receiving offerings to Thor. I assume their pagan songs were quite different from, and most probably a lot more naughty than, Christmas carols, but the essence is the same, people embodying the dying and resurrecting goats of Thor, the symbols of renewed strength, the pulling power of the goats, rejuvenation, and the restoration of the nourishment into the world. Okay, so it is 10:18, and I think it's close enough to the bottom of the hour where I can say that you guys are listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, and we are here today talking about Yule and the winter solstice, and I'm going to play a few songs here. And the first song I'm going to play is Darb the Bard's On Midwinter's Day. So here it is, and I will follow up with some more songs, hopefully about Yule, maybe not, depending on what we have in the deck. And we will be back shortly. Thank you for listening.
Wisdom of our ancient past. 3 days the sun has been still in the sky, but the time has now come for his birth. His birth, oh.
So come on, you people, come and sing with me. Join our voices and sing the long night away. All over the land a chorus of voices will sing for the rising sun on midwinter's day. On midwinter's day.
Two giants of leaves. light and one dark. Even now the wheel it is turning. I'm the horn god, I'm the face in the trees. I'm the breath of the wind that rustles the leaves. I'm the green man in the wildwood, I roam. Cernunnos, I'm Pan, and I'm Earth.
Orchestra and Noon of the Solstice by Darb the Bard, preceded by another song by Darb the Bard, which I introduced to you before. And we're back on the Sacred Divergence Radio on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. And we believe on this network that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Today we're talking about the winter solstice, their myths and imagery, and I have another page here that I would like to read to you, and it's a bit shorter than the one I was reading before. But it says that the winter solstice Sabbat occurs on or about December 31st, when the sun is at 1 degree Capricorn. It marks the midway point of the dark part of the year. On the very next day, we begin to see an increase in light, which is why we celebrate the reverse of the sun on the winter solstice. Both Wiccan myth cycles, the Oath and Holly Kings and the Dying and Reborn God, developed dramatically on the Sabbat. This celebration is made powerful from the additional energies available from other celebrations, such as Christmas and Hanukkah. And happy Hanukkah, by the way. I think it's Hanukkah. Let me check on that here really quick. The Google search. Hanukkah 2015 begins the evening of December 6th, which is a Sunday, today. And ends the evening of Monday, December 14th. So happy Hanukkah to all of those celebrating. And let's go back to this page that I had here. For many Wiccans, the winter solstice Sabbat marks the beginning of a week-long family celebration, which includes Christmas and New Year's Eve. In the myth of the Oak and Holly Kings, the two gods meet again for another battle. During the summer solstice, the Holly King, god of the waning year, defeated the Oak King, god of the waxing year. When they meet on the longest night of the year, the outcome is reversed. The Oak King defeats the Holly King. In the myth of the dying and reborn god, it is this night that the goddess gives birth to her son. She represents life and death, a reminder that, although most of nature appears to be dead, it is only waiting for the right time to burst into life again. Beyond the Wiccan celebration, many other cultures have myths associated with this time of year. Generally in a dying and reborn god cycle. Major examples of this include Christ, whose birth was not fixed until 273 CE, Tammuz, and Osiris, although his festival may have been celebrated in November. The general theme is that the continuation of the fertility. Just as the god appeared to be dead but rose again, so shall the dead seem in grain fields. To me, the winter solstice is both a celebration and the rebirth of God, and, hence, the return of the sun, and a celebration of family. It is one of the few times during the year that I get to see some members of my family. I also make a point of sending out Christmas cards to nearly everyone in my address book, letting them know that I think of them, even if we haven't spoken in ages. Most of my celebrations during this time of year take place after the winter solstice, since my family is Christian. I see the winter solstice the day with the longest night, being the perfect time to slow down and reflect on the season. The shopping is done, as is the decorating and the wrapping. It is quiet, fallow time before the hectic days surrounding Christmas arrive. It is a time to recognize how blessed I am to have family to spend time with, money to spend on gifts, and a home to decorate. I think, perhaps, if the night was not long and quiet, it would not feel the same. There is something about the dark and the cold that makes one want to be inside and puts one in a reflective mood. But the promise of the returning sun, like the upcoming celebrations, carries with it a reminder of how vibrant life can be. So that was found on silverlotus.net. Under their Wheel of the Year rights, the title of the article was Winter Solstice Lore and Ritual. And now I have something for us from the Circle Sanctuary. And Circle Sanctuary reminds us that today's Santa is a folklore figure with multicultural roots. He embodies characteristics of Saturn, the Roman agricultural god, Kronos, the Greek god, also known as Father Time, the Holly King, the Celtic god of dying year, Father Ice, Grandfather Frost, Russian winter god, Thor, the Norse sky god who rides the sky in a chariot drawn by goats, and Odin Wotan, Scandinavian Teutonic Allfather who rides the sky on an eight-legged horse, Frey, Norse fertility god, and the Tomte, a Norse land spirit known for giving gifts to children at this time of year. Santa's reindeer can be viewed as forms of the Hearn, the Celtic horned god. Decorate your home with Santa images that reflect its pagan heritage. Honor the goddess as a great mother. Place pagan mother goddess images around your home. You may also want to include one of those with a sun child, such as Isis and Horus. Pagan goddess forms, traditionally linked with this time of year, include the Tonantzin, native Mexican corn mother, Hulda, Teutonic earth goddess of good fortune, Bonadea, Roman women's goddess of abundance and prophecy, Ops, Roman goddess of plenty, Aset Isis, Egyptian multicultural all-goddess, whose worship continued in Christian times under the name Mary, Lucina St. Lucy, Roman Swedish goddess saint of light, and Befana, light Italian witch who gives gifts to children at this season. So there you have it, people. A little bit about the myths and imagery of the winter solstice and the solstice season. And for me, personally, I enjoy this time of year because it gives me the chance to reflect back on all the things that I've been given and everything that is good that has come into my life. And it's also time to slow down and think of those people that I might not have talked to as much as I wanted to, and get in touch with them, and talk with them, and see how they're doing, and catching up on things like that. For me, it's also a busy time of year, because, you know, you have all the wrapping of gifts, and the presents, and whatnot, although that's going to be scarce this year because of a money issue, but that's another story. So it's a time to give thanks. It's a time to pray and to reflect and to meditate on all that we want for the coming year and all that we have been given, and thank the goddess and the god for everything that they have bestowed upon us, everything that we have been blessed with throughout the year. So I'm going to play some more music, and then I'm going to head out. I want to thank all of you for listening, and I'll pick a few random songs here from the deck until the top of our hour. And I'll come back at the end, and I'll say good night again. So never fear, I am always here. And I look forward to next week when I can regale you with some more stories and whatnot. So let's see here. Who shall we play? S.J. Tucker. Let's see. I'm trying to pull up S.J. here. Let's play The Hymn to Hearn, since that's also a solstice song, although it's referring to the summer solstice, not the winter solstice. And then I will play Witch's Rune by her as well, the first two songs. And then the rest I'll tell you after they play. Here we go. Hymn to Herne.
You can say your prayers, work your rites, burn your little candle day and night. You can shimmy till dawn to the pounding drums, but you best be ready when the horn one comes, yeah. Sound of a hunting horn, you dance a ring in the gathering storm. If the solstice time, get your panties in a wad. Just the coming of the horn god, he will call you out, make you sweat, give you a blessing that you'll never forget. So revel in the chase and let your heartbeat run. Blessed are the children of the horned one. Blessed are the children of the horned one. Hey. Hunter who tracks outside of time, guardian lord of ancient rhyme. Brother stag in the musky glen, consort of the goddess in the woodland den. We call you forth as we make our way, walking in your power every day. Guide us through in our hunt this night, and maybe even later in the great rite. He will call you out, make you sweat, give you a blessing that you'll never forget. So revel in the chase and let your heartbeat run. Blessed are the children of the horned one.
Blessed are the children of the horned one.
Yeah. Speak to the sound of a hunting horn. If you dance a ring in the gathering storm. So revel in the chase and let your heartbeat run. When the horn one comes, he's gonna call you out, make you sweat, give you a blessing that you'll never forget. Revel in the chase and let your heartbeat run. Blessed are the children of the horned one. Blessed are the children of the horned one. Blessed are the children of the horned one.
With us as power builds.
is her own. Father of the summer dew, hunter of the winter snows, with open arms we welcome you. Dance with us as power
And that was the Dragon Ritual Drummers with The Fall, which is a remix of Made in the Dragon, or on Made in the Dragon remix. I'm not really sure. It just says Made in the Dragon remix. And before that was S.J. Tucker's two songs, which were introduced before they were played. And then lastly, we have Emerald Rose's Autumn in Asheville, which is a nice musical exit for us tonight. But before I go, I need to tell you all the next 108 names of Isis, which I forgot to do today. And I'm trying to look it up here. Here we go. Names of Isis. Let's see if I have them all laid out here. It's still loading. 91. Ah, yes, here we go. So, last week we got up to the 216th name, and that was She Who Feeds. So now we begin with 217, She Who Nourishes, Nature, Female Principle of Nature, Green Goddess, Lady of Herbs, Lady of Green Herbs, the Green One, She Whose Garments are the Greenest of the Earth, She Who is the Green Earth, Queen of the Sea, Isis of the Sea, Queen of Seamanship, Stella Maris, Star of the Sea, Isis Pelagia, Isis Navigum, Isis Eupolia, Salvatrix of Sailors, Mary, Lady of the Sea, Light Giver of Heaven, Lady of Light, Shining One, Maker of the Sunrise, Mistress of the Dawn, Goddess of the Rosy Dawn, Ray of the Sun, Name of the Sun, Gold, Lady of Gold, Isis is Queen of the Dead, Queen of the Underworld, Great Goddess of the Underworld, Mistress of Eternity, Mistress of the Tomb, Benefactress of the Tuat, Destroyer of Darkness, Lady of the Western Mountain, Lady of the Eastern Mountain, Lady of Dawn, Mistress of the Sun, Isis Invicta, Victrix, Lady of the New Year, Isis Stept, Opener of the Year, Holy One, Holy Blessed Lady, Lady Isis, Queen Isis, the All Goddess, Lady of Every Country, Intervening Power, Creation, Creatrix, Dynamis, Dynastis, One Above Fate, Dea Ex Machina, Glorious Goddess, the Eternal Woman, Lady of Joy, Lady of Thunder, Queen of the Thunderbolt, Mistress of the Evening Star, Isis Hathor, Isis Silket, Isis Nekbet, Isis Astarte, Isis Inanna, Isis Aphrodite, Isis Aphrodite Astarte, Isis Diana, Isis Fortuna, Isis Nike, Uraeus, Isis the Winged One, Lady of the Ankh, Lady of the Lotus Staff, Lady of the Papyrus Staff, Lady of the Sun Disc, Crown of the Empty Throne, Lady of the Double Dawn, Feather of Maat, Lady of Maat, She Who is Maat, Lady of Balance, Lady of Harmony, Lady of the Beautiful Pyramid, Lady of the Perfect Triangle, Lady of Red, Lady of the Blue Sky, Lady of the White Clothes, Lady of the White Linen, Lady of Azure, Lady of Lapis Lazuli, Lady of the Black Robes Who Mourns Osiris, Lady of the Black Earth, Lady of the Sistrum, Lady of Blood, Cornucopia, Rudder of Ships, Sail of Ships, Lady of the Horns and the Moon, Lady of the Silver Moon, She Who Guides the Moon, She Who Guides the Stars, Lady of Barley, Mistress of Crops, Lady of Wheat, Lady of Flax, Lady of Myrrh, Lady of the Date Palm, Lady of the Notched Palm, Lady of the Sycamore, Lady of the Persia, Lady of the Tree of Life, Lady of the Everfruit, Lady of All That Grows, Lady of the Tiat, Isis Knot, Lady of the Falcon, Mistress of Swallows, Winged One, Benevolent Goddess, She Who Answers Prayers, She Who Guides, Lady of Blessings. So there we have it, folks. That is another 100 and some odd names of Isis for you to enjoy. Sorry if I was skipping over the lady a little bit there. But a lot of those were Lady of the whatnot. So I hope you enjoyed. And we will talk to you all soon. And I hope you all have a good night. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Sacred Divergence Radio with your hostess, Reverend Elizabeth, and friends on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Have a topic for us to discuss on air? Connect with Reverend Elizabeth at sacreddivergenceradio@gmail.com and on Twitter at sdivergence with hashtag topic hat. See you next week at 10 p.m. Eastern here on Sacred Divergence Radio and the Spiritual Unity Radio Network.